a reading from the Bible, which they have suggested. Reading Psalm 91. Whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Surely He will save you from the fowler's snare and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and rampart. You will not fear the terror of night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in the darkness, nor the plague that destroys at midday. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come near you. You will only observe with your eyes and see the punishment of the wicked. If you say, "The Lord is my refuge," and you make the Most High your dwelling, no harm will overtake you. No disaster will come near your tent. For He will command His angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. They will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. You will tread on the lion and the cobra. You will trample the great lion and the serpent. Because He loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue him. I will protect him, for he acknowledges my name. He will call on me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honour him. With long life I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. Lord, as Emily and Chris share with us now from their story and your story with them, may it encourage us and point us to Jesus. For we ask it in His name. Amen.
Hi there. Now, most of you watching this probably know us, but it might be useful for anybody who doesn't, just to briefly introduce ourselves. So my name's Emily. I've been a Christian for, over 40 years. I became a Christian when I was quite a lot younger. And I've been involved in Beverley Baptist Church for about 30 years, so I joined fairly soon after the church started. And I am married to Chris.
I'm Chris, married to Emily. And I've been a Christian since about 1991, 92, something like that. We've got two grown-up daughters, Naomi and Mary, both away working now and studying. So that's me. Now, one of the reasons we're talking is about because something happened in our lives in 2017. So I was quite happily working one day, cycled cycling home as I did hundreds of times on the 22nd of November 2017, and about 5:15, I'll lead it to Emily then, because I don't remember much after that.
So I got a phone call. I was at home having tea with our younger daughter. Our older daughter was away at university at the time, and it was the hospital to say that Chris had had an accident on his bike. He'd been cycling for so many years, and I sort of always thought at some point I might get that call. But they said he'd had a little bit of an accident with a van, and that he was asking for me. So my first thought is, oh, he's broken a leg or something. So I packed him an overnight bag just in case he needed to stay in, and I went in. It was quite clear when I got to A&E that it was quite a lot more serious than they'd said on the phone. He was actually conscious at that point, but obviously in an awful lot of pain. He doesn't remember any of that. And he was having kind of various tests and x-rays and things. It kind of transpired over what we learned then and over the course of sort of various months of investigations that he'd actually been bounced under along the bottom of an HGV and popped out at the other end. Shouldn't have survived at all, really, but was in quite a bad state. I'm not going to list all his injuries, but his back was broken in a couple of places. One arm and sort of shoulder blade and everything was really quite badly mangled. Most of his ribs were broken, had broken bones in his face, and he had some damage to internal organs as well as a result of all of that. So they took him up to intensive care, and over the next few days he had various operations to try and put some of those things right. I think overall he was in intensive care maybe 5-6 weeks, most of that time on a ventilator to help him breathe, and also a machine to kind of help with his kidneys. So yeah, quite a long time. That was several weeks, which included his 50th birthday and Christmas as well. So it was quite a challenging time.
So after all that, which I can remember, I can't remember any of it. Lots of strange dreams, but we don't go into those. And I woke up about January the 7th, I think it was. And I just remember it was a classic Hollywood moment of waking up and looking at some ceiling, some polystyrene ceiling tiles above me, thinking, oh, something must have happened. I'm in a hospital. And I didn't believe what had happened at the time. Emily had to tell me a number of times before I believed what had actually happened. And so, because I remember the accident, fortunately for me, I don't remember the accident at all. So, and that's a blessing. So that was the start in January of the recovery. So I'd woken up and it was a long process because I had to learn to walk again because of my broken back. And I couldn't eat. I was nailed by mouth. I had a tube in my stomach because I had some throat damage. And I couldn't swallow. So I was in a whole royal for a few days longer after January's, until about January 22nd, I think. And then I got transferred to Castle Hill. And in Castle Hill, that was the recovery ward, I think they called it, rehabilitation ward, that's what they call it. And I was there until about towards the end of March, learning to walk, physio every day, on a feed through my stomach, various scans, etc. And so that was good in its way because I was in the right place. But we're talking into March now. We're from November to March, me not being home. About 4 months, not being home, being in hospital, all that goes with that. And whilst the NHS staff were great, and actually I didn't mind being in hospital. I was in hospital in quite a bad way. So I returned back at home in March. And that was, again, just recovery, but I was recovery at home. And so just walking, you know, I remember walking to the bus stop for the first time, you know, about 120 yards or whatever it was. And then the next day I added an extra 20 yards or so onto that. And that's how I recovered. And it was a long and arduous process, but I was back at work in 6 months' time, 6 months after the accident. And I'm still in that process, recovery process now. Because, as Emily has explained, they weren't small injuries and they were quite life-changing injuries as well.
So that's kind of what happened. In a sense, that's not the important part of the story. The important part of the story is what we've kind of learnt about God through it all and how we've kind of been aware of him through the process. So that's what we're going to kind of focus on and talk a bit about, what we've learnt through the experience of these past few years.
So, I mean, I think that the thing I mentioned earlier on, waking up in a hospital bed and in a Hollywood moment looking at the polystyrene tiles, that's so fixed in my mind. But at the same time, what's fixed in my mind was I woke up, I'm thinking something must have happened. I'm in a hospital. I'm alive. Thank God. It was that. And I felt, from that moment, I felt protection. And I've never not felt it. And I feel in, whilst I can't remember any of the accidents and what the recovery when I was in the intensive care unit, etc., I just have certainty that God was with me in that time. He was with me when I was asleep. He was with me through all my bad patches, but he was with me. And I think that's that certainty just gave me so much comfort and certainty about life. That, you know, whilst something horrible had happened, God was still with me. And also, I think also it's important to think about what goes on before things happen. So what's happening in your life at the moment to prepare you for the stuff you don't know is coming? And because we never know what's coming around the corner. And I think I was training for the Rudolph Romp, which is like a 25-mile cross-country race. I was just running a marathon a few months earlier. I was fit. I'd done a triathlon that year. I was fitter than I'd ever been. And so I had a training mentality and I had the fitness. So the fitness saved me. And a training mentality. Okay, I wasn't training to run the fast of sub 3:30 marathon, which is my target. I was training to learn to walk again. And so I think that sort of equipping of God in your lives right now is as important as what's in the future. So don't take what you've got now for granted.
For me, that sort of sense of God's presence was really important as well. The hardest time for me and the girls was when Chris was in intensive care and oblivious to it all, because you know he was so badly injured. We had there was no kind of quick recovery, and we had no idea what the future held. So I didn't know whether he was going to wake up again. I didn't know if there'd been any brain damage, because that wasn't clear at first. And I didn't know if he was going to be able to walk again or any of those things. So it was a lot of uncertainty. When he came off the ventilator, he suffered, which is quite common, from delirium, which meant he was very strange, said all sorts of weird things. And in a sense, it kind of felt like it wasn't him anymore. And there was, you know, a short time when I was thinking, is he going to be changed forever? Is he not going to be the same person that he was? So it was quite a frightening time. And yet, like Chris says, I was so aware of God's presence through it all, that we weren't alone, and that Chris wasn't alone. So, you know, I was by his bed when I could be, and my dad was there quite a lot of the time when I couldn't be as well. But even when we couldn't be there watching him, he was being cared for so well. But we also just knew that God was there with him, and that was a real comfort. It was also a real sense that God was with me and the girls as well, and helping us to cope with that. And for the girls at school and university, being able to kind of carry on with that despite all that was going on. And one of the ways in which God kind of really made his presence known to us was through other people. So our family and friends were just amazing. Nothing was too big or too small to do for us. And our church family just rallied round and supported us in so many ways and demonstrated God's love and support for us. And like I say, nothing was too big or too small, whether it was, you know, driving to and from university to bring Naomi home, or if it was cooking meals, or making sure our tropical fish didn't die without Chris to look after them. You know, people were there to help us in so many ways. And that was an enormous help to us. But not only were people doing practical things, but we just felt constantly supported in prayer. It felt like everybody that we knew was praying, and lots of people that we didn't know as well. So other Christians from around Beverley, from other congregations, were praying for us. People shared updates with their people that they knew all around the world. And I think at one point we worked out there was almost somebody on every continent praying for us. And not just praying for Chris, not just praying for me and the girls, but praying for the driver of the lorry as well, who, you know, we'd been told was you know, really devastated by what had happened. So it just felt like through that most difficult time that I was being carried, that I didn't have to do anything. God was just carrying me through it all.
In terms of while I was in hospital, and the way God was in it all, was when I was in hospital, people used to say, "Who are all these people visiting you?" And I had to explain to all the variety of people visiting me, to people in the hospital, the nurses and the other patients, who these people were. People in hospital just don't get that many visitors. And All I can say, the importance of that, so it was immense to me when I was sitting there. And Emily, we used to have a little book where Emily used to say, so so-and-so is visiting you today, and so-and-so is coming tomorrow, and the day after that, so-and-so is visiting you. And it was a different people every day, and many people from our fellowship, and other people from old work colleagues, old friends.
Even people that we didn't know that had been praying for, yes, for Chris. Yes. And then said, oh, now that he's getting a bit better, can we come and visit him in hospital? Amazing.
And it was just that kind of witness and that love and that support. And the love, I think the thing I was thinking about is the love that we share with each other is you can't value it enough, because the world is not like that in other places. People don't express love the way that Christians can express love to each other, as Emily says. Strangers who we've never met, we have that love of God in common, and that's really important and strong message to people, which I don't think we value enough as Christians. And the other opportunities I think what arose from this situation was it was very easy to focus on blaming people and regretting what was lost, etc. And, you know, there can't be, you know, I've lost a lot, we've lost a lot in this accident, and the things I've planned for the future aren't there anymore. But what we have to focus on is the future, not on what we've lost. And I also, anger is such a negative feeling that actually, again, when throughout this whole situation, people were talking to us about, you know, you must blame somebody, etc., etc., and you must feel horrible. And we don't blame people. And forgiveness, again, is such an important thing. And when it came to the trial of the lorry driver, etc., that was a real witness. And I think if we can, and the judge in the court and the driver, it made national press. You know, cyclist forgives driver who almost killed him, was in one of the national newspapers. And that's because it's unusual. Because we are not the judge. God is the judge, and we can forgive and show God's love in the world. And it's not a great world, but at least we can do something in it. So, and that's one of the big lessons we took away. And the other thing is about it's ongoing issues. I mean, it's how you take forward life into the future, and how we have to appreciate that God is with us in our day-to-day lives. I've said in the past to people, you know, since my accident, don't undervalue boring. Boring is not as bad as you think. A nice, boring, steady life, you know, value it, because it's excitement is overrated. And so, I don't know what's ahead, and we don't know what's ahead, but we trust God in what's ahead. And my health issues will continue, and they'll probably get worse. I've got various long-term health issues. But I still know God's there in that situation.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we've learnt most, is that it is really good to remind ourselves of how faithful God has been in the past, and particularly as we look over everything that's happened since the accident. Because even though we face uncertainty in the future, we can see how God has been with us in the past, and so we can trust him for the future as well. And that doesn't mean that bad things won't happen, but we're confident that just as God has proved that he's with us through all of this, that he will be with us in the future. And in telling our story, the important bit isn't that it's about us. We went through a challenging time, but actually most of you watching this will have gone through really awful things as well. You might be going through really dreadful things right now. There's nothing particularly special about us. What's special is that you know, we are so sure that God is right there with us, and that he remains faithful in everything that we face. We're going to close our service by singing a song which was really important to me when Chris was in hospital. It's a song called Holy Overshadowing, and it references Psalm 91 that we read earlier. There's one part of the song I'm just going to read to you. It says, no burden on my back too hard to bear, only the easy load you bid me wear. Until these troubles pass, my heart will sing praise for the holy overshadowing, underneath your wings, overshadowing. And the hope of those words is not that troubles won't come, but that in the midst of troubles, we can rest in the shadow of God's love and protection. And also, there's a promise there that these troubles will pass. This is not forever. There will be a time when our troubles are gone. And if not in this life, then we have a hope of an everlasting future where there's no more death or mourning or crying or pain.